Welcome to the Deep Side of Dallas podcast. I'm Paul Corliss, Chief Communications Officer for the University of North Texas System, here with my co-host Rudy Bush of the Dallas Morning News. From politics to pandemics and all points in between, it's been a fascinating year in Dallas. And in this episode of the Deep Side, we'll take a look back on the year that was with Metro columnist Sharon Grigsby and political reporter Gromer Jeffers of the Dallas Morning News. Sharon, Gromer, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Oh, man. Two of my favorite people in the whole wide world. Just the best. Two people I've done this journalism stuff with for a long time. So very glad that you guys are on the Deep Side. Really a crazy year in a lot of ways, but kind of thought we were out of COVID, then back into COVID, had the legislature be even weirder than it normally is weird. And you guys did a huge amount of work covering the city. So, I mean, I guess, and Sharon, I'll put you right on the spot first. You write at least two columns a week covering the city, oftentimes three columns. And what were the stories that you cared about the most? What stood out to you as the things you're just really glad you got to cover?
So, like you said, this year started with this idea that of hope and the vaccine, and then I was right back in Parkland with more deaths than ever. Wrote a lot about families dealing both with, you know, three or four people in one family dying, nurses just being driven to the brink. Those I'm really will always feel most privileged that I got to write those stories.
Yeah, and let me interrupt you. Just, let me interrupt you about that, because I think we need to say this, right? You were the first, and to my knowledge, the only journalist who got behind what we called the red door. So set that table just a little bit and tell us kind of, that was 2020, and then you were back in 2021.
Correct. From the time the pandemic rolled in March of 2020, I started trying to make connections at Parkland. First column, I had to do it by phone. Second column, I got in the building. Third column was done in a conference room right outside the red door. I even got to watch them don and doff the protective gear. But by June, I got to go in and did that with various photographers. But as I said, by the end of the year, I had hoped that the rest of the stories coming out of Parkland were going to be good news, lower numbers. And when I went back in, and those trips inside were always overwhelming. You just took deep breaths and tried to put on your journalist cap and do the best you could. But that, you know, there's a lot of death. There's a lot of grimness. And I thought we were going to have hope. And instead, that February, the time I went back in February, it was just the worst it had been. As far as defeated nurses, that was the story where a young mother who was pregnant delivered her baby, got worse and worse and worse.
Oh, man, I remember that.
And they were so sure then that she had turned a corner for the better. And then she turned another corner. And I was there like 2 days after she passed. And that was the worst I had ever seen those nurses. But, you know, I've said this a lot, but I mean it more every time I say it. What the nurses and doctors have done, what all the support staff in those hospitals has done, and what our teachers have done this year, those are all frontline workers that make our jobs really look easy.
And they continue to do it, right? Right. I mean, we're seeing, it's kind of scary because we see now cases are on a rise again, another variant. I don't know. It just, in many respects, you just hope that their work doesn't go unrecognized, because now they're sort of back in the shadows again as this pandemic continues to rage.
Exactly. And I think one of the things I saw that you saw from a very different perspective was how they were trying to manage their emotions right. at the same time as what was going on in Austin.
Yeah.
I mean, I had doctors just like throw up their hands. And I mean, these were people, it wasn't about being a Democrat or a Republican. It was what made the most sense and yeah. what they were dealing with, saving lives while something real different was going on this year in the legislature.
Right.
Well, and if I may meander just off the coverage aspect of it for a second, the phrase that we hear, I feel like, more than ever this year is mental health, right? It's constantly something we hear about no matter what business we're in. Is that something you encountered throughout, not just pandemic related, but were there mental health things that either you ran into? It just jumped out at me as I was hearing us talk about, you know, all the stress that these folks have gone through.
Yeah, and I think in all aspects of life and work and just trying to get through this pandemic, there's been a mental health equation. And with a lot of folks who don't really talk about it, right, Sharon? I mean, it's been tough for some folks living in isolation. And then working, the frontline workers, I mean, imagine that. I mean, just how you feel after that sort of effort.
Yeah, and the pandemic has redefined everything. I call it the year of dog paddling.
Hmm.
And
I like that.
Whereas we thought we were coming out of it in 20, and we have dog paddled, and we've often dog paddled
right.
in circles. That said, you've got this latest report that's come out saying that teenagers and young children have the worst mental health problems in history. You've got your teachers with mental health issues. I think it's exacerbated everything. And what's the weirdest thing to me is that, like, think about 9/11, and that redefined everything. But there was kind of a beginning and an end.
Right.
This is not ever going to end in the way that we think of things, of crises having a beginning and an end. It's going to more kind of drift away over time.
And you have to find a way to live with it, right? Right, Sharon?
Yes.
And I think that's what we're struggling with right now. And we see these outbreaks in sports leagues now, the NBA and the NFL. It's extraordinary what's happening. And you get the sense that people are ready to be done with the pandemic,
yeah.
but that's just not the case. The pandemic is not done with us. So we have to figure out how to navigate it all. And I think that tears at us and wears at the mental health of a lot of folks. And then the whole vaccine question, right?
For sure.
Yeah.
And those are the things that I think make both your school districts and your medical centers the most crazy. That's
yeah.
what they're most struggling with. I want to shift just a little bit on
right.
the pandemic. One of the things that most concerns me, which goes back to Rudy's original question, is the stories I'm glad I've covered this year. The pandemic has given so many opportunities to do things undercover in our government. And I don't know, Gromer, if it was at all this way in Austin, but in Dallas City Hall, so much has happened just in 2021 that...
It's been the greatest gift to governmental nonsense that we've ever had in my journalistic career. It's just whatever they want to do. Under cover of darkness, they put a pandemic label on and then work through it. But and I want to get into that because I think it's critical, but I just wanted to say on the mental health question, Sharon, reading your stories helped give me a grounding in what was going on in these COVID wards in Parkland. And for me, at least as a reader, having that sense of reality of what this disease was actually was grounding. Like I felt... saddened but strengthened knowing what was happening there. And but I want, let's get back to this government point that you're making, but I just wanted to put that note in about how important it was. And maybe you can detail some of the things you saw government do. What I saw them do was open meetings were super sloppy if they were open at all. They stopped answering journalist questions for records requests. they stopped making themselves available, and that's just, boy, that is the best they can get. Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. It was actually your line, I think. I may steal it eventually for a column that you said that told me recently the pandemic was the best gift for incompetence. And that pretty much sums it up even better than what you said previously. We had hires made at City Hall that people in the community have no idea these people are even in jobs. As you and Gromer both well know from covering City Hall, a lot of what you learn at City Hall is walking those halls.
Yes.
And running into people and learning stuff, and that's all been so shut down. There is still very little return to work at Dallas City Hall as far as working in person. And so a problem department like the permitting department is like on steroids.
Yeah.
It's just worse than ever. And they can say, oh, well, you know, we're all we're trying to work remote. We don't have a computer system that's really great for remote. I saw another department recently that said, we just couldn't do public meetings this year, but other departments are doing Zoom meetings without any problem. And I'm talking about with town hall public virtual meetings.
Right.
It's just, it probably has set back accountability by a decade.
But there's one guy, I think you and I'll be interested in Gromer's take on this. There's one guy at City Hall we think actually upped his game a little bit this year. And I wrote a pretty testy column about Mayor Eric Johnson where I said he was blowing it, right? And I think you wrote a column within a few days of that kind of looked at it in a different way, but we were at the same place. So, I mean, what do you guys think? What is the mayor's – is his game up? Is he doing better?
He's doing better, without a doubt. In terms of – okay, I'll tell you what he's doing better at where he struggled, and that is dealing with the rest of the council.
Mm-hmm.
And he's refrained from being the dictator that other council members perceived him to be, and actually working at having – and developing relationships with council members that for whatever reason he didn't do when he became mayor. And I asked him about this, not for a story, but just talking to him. And he said that the easing of the pandemic and sort of how they were all able to get together, not, like you liked it to be, but more than they were, helped in building those relationships. But for maybe it was criticism, maybe it was the council elections where he was humbled to some degree.
You don't think it was entirely my column?
It was my column.
Right. But I think he's, and maybe advice, maybe he's taking advice from advisors.
Yeah.
But it is, he has done better. But the trick is to keep it going, right?
Right.
To continue it.
That's the hard thing.
Right.
And y'all know I'm, even in this group, the Pollyanna of the bunch. And so...
We like to think you're an optimist.
Yes, I'm most the optimist. But I also think I'll be the one who mentions, it seems pretty obvious, especially after the Eddie Bernice Johnson decision, that the mayor is going to run for office again. I think, at least for me, a year ago, even 6 months ago, I wasn't so sure of that. I actually did at least think it was 50-50 when Eddie Bernice announced that she was, or we knew she was likely, thanks to Gromer, we knew that she was almost certainly going to resign that Saturday. I still thought it was 50-50 that the mayor was going to run.
So did I.
And so I think that a lot of the way the mayor's doing things is that he knows he wants to get reelected. And, I mean, the mayor's very confident that he's got the regular guy and girl in his pocket. I mean, and I mean that in a good way. You can see it with his newsletter. He communicates directly with people. And yet, I think he knows he's where his weak spots are, and this is one of them.
Yeah, he does. In many ways, and I think you will agree with this, Rudy, the job of mayor as defined, the council manager form, is not best suited to his his image, his style, right? I mean, he's more, I see him more as a strong mayor guy in his heart, right? He'll be somewhere in like New York, Chicago, right? Where he could sort of say, this is how it's going to be. And so for me, the challenge for him is to continue to be able to communicate and see a council member maybe that he thinks that he has better ideas than, right? To treat that council member with the sort of the respect that he wants for himself. And that maybe was lacking a little bit in the past where the criticism was that he would roll over those folks. So we'll see if he can continue that. But you're right, Sharon. There's a re-election coming up. I don't know. We'll see which candidates emerge. There's been a lot of rumors out there. But the way he campaigns, I think he's confident that he'll be able to get re-election. Mm-hmm. But the question is, can he rally a Dallas council, a finicky council? And you've covered the council before.
Lord.
Rudy, and you, Sharon, had been directed council coverage before, and you know how finicky those guys can be. Can you rally those guys around an agenda? And he still has a lot to do with that agenda. Workforce readiness, for instance, yeah. All kinds of things. Ethics still is out there.
Indeed.
So. You know what I found interesting is I don't live and die the political scene like you do, obviously, but I follow along the conversations on social media, and I feel like he's gotten, whoever is doing it, whether it's him or whomever, it feels like he's gotten better. It feels like he's gotten better at engaging people of various constituencies. I'll give you an example. I thought it was interesting when SMU's football coach left to go to TCU that he weighed in on that, right? And got people fired up about it. Or we at UNT had something out that our chancellor put out, and he's never engaged with us at all. And engaged with us. And I found that interesting. Do you see anything there? And if so, I guess my question, the follow-up would be, how important in today's world, especially when you're not face-to-face due to the pandemic, are those types of interactions on social media?
Oh, they're very important. They're very important to build a personality and an image and a brand. And he's been able to identify that and do that, and we don't know if it's him. I think a lot of it is him.
It feels authentic.
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. And that's the name of the game today. And there are politicians across the state who are unable to connect that way. But that's not only the future of politics. This is here right now. If you don't have a social media presence, if you're not communicating with folks via social media, then you're behind. There's no direct mail. You know, remember TV ads used to be big. You used to pound them with television. You're a win. Now that's not so much that anymore. And it became mail. You got to flood the mailboxes, direct mail. Now social media now. You got to find a way to connect people on their phones, on their devices, whether it's a video or whatever. You know, and he's good at doing that.
No, I think so, too. A separate question, politics-wise, has there been anybody locally, and local could be at the state level, too, not just city level, has there been anybody that's emerged as a rising star, a new voice over the last year?
Wow.
There are a lot of people out there who have potential. We got a lot of really authentic young leaders emerging in this
Colin
city.
Colin Harvard, maybe?
Yeah.
The congressman.
I still think somebody like Taylor Toynes, somebody like even, I still wish Michael Sorrell would do something. I realize he's not in that youngest group. I think there are a lot of people out there doing good work, but I don't hear them wanting to go into politics right now.
Johnson took a little bit of the air out of the room locally by getting better.
Right.
Which, frankly, I'm probably the more cynical of the bunch. I didn't think he was going to get better. I didn't think he was going to improve politically, and he did. So I underestimated him. So good for him. And once, you know, once somebody steps up as a leader, right, and shows I'm in charge right now, that puts other people in a back seat. Mm-hmm. But I think the person I'm watching the most is Jasmine Crockett, who is going to run for Eddie Bernice Johnson's seat. And she took the Johnson seat when Johnson left office to become mayor. I think, she's on a rocket ship, and she's young, and she's going to get – I think she's going to win. You know, early prediction, obviously anything can happen. But if she does, she's going to get to Congress, and I think she's going to be pretty – you know, we've had a – and no disrespect to Eddie Bernice Johnson, but – she has not been vocal like she once was, and I don't think Jasmine Crockett, if she goes to Congress, is going to have that problem.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Jasmine Crockett is a freshman in the Texas House, a freshman.
Yeah, brand new.
In a Republican House.
Right, in a Republican-controlled House. But you talked about social media. I mean, she's part of not just the Instagram generation, but the TikTok generation.
God, help us.
When she filed for Eddie Bernice Johnson's seat, there was chatter on social media. Well, what's going to happen with her TikTok, her state TikTok account or whatever, you know, because she had branded herself in those ways. But when you think about it, it's fascinating. Here she is. She's not from Dallas originally.
Right.
First term freshman lawmaker in the Texas House, on the verge, and anything that happened, there's folks in that race, but in position to basically come here and take control of a historic congressional seat. That's fascinating.
Yeah,
it's
like
astounding.
Three people in town knew her name 2 years ago.
Right. Yeah, and when you think about that state house race that she won against Lorraine Bierpel, who had a big lead in early voting and made a fateful decision not to have folks, poll workers, because of the pandemic. And Crockett was like, well, we got to have...
Got to win.
We hope, right. And just think about in a low turnout race when people don't really know the candidates, and you have one candidate with poll workers handing out push cards with your face on it, and the other with no presence. You can see how that race turned, and it did. She goes to the state house. She becomes the face, one of the faces of the Democratic Party walkout on the elections bill on MSNBC every night, and it raised her profile, and now we're here.
Yeah. So.
Another thing as we approach the end of the year that we've seen some politicians, the mayor in particular, kind of thumping their chest over is lower crime this year. And would be interested in each of your thoughts on crime and is there less crime because there's fewer people out due to the pandemic?
Well, I talked to Chief Garcia actually about this week and to the mayor this morning, in fact, because, yes, I thought it was interesting that some of the TV stations have used words like boast about the numbers and brag about the numbers. I have not had a chance to go back and watch public safety on Monday.
When talking those, about the council committee.
Yes, the last numbers came out, and we don't have year-end numbers yet. Garcia says that it's, and the mayor would agree, it's the hotspot strategy. It's the grid strategy. I mean, all of us have been around long enough that we saw Chief Brown used that strategy, and I wouldn't be surprised if Chief Kunkel didn't use it before him. It's not unique. But I believe that it's a lot to do with, this is such a cliche, but that data-driven policing and the fact that I do believe morale is so much better on the in the police department, and I think that does somehow translate through the whole city. Now, I know that, you know, the editorial board's taken some heat about the whole issue of is crime down, is not crime down. I mean, I agree with the fact that you talk to a lot of people in Dallas and they don't they don't feel safer. They don't think that it's down. So I can see where some of that was coming from.
Well, and not to, surprisingly, people criticize us. Oh, no. But look, government is great at framing numbers in ways that are good for government. And if you look at it 20 to 21, I think it's a good picture, and it is important. But I think if you look at the long-term trend here, we're a long way from where we were when we were saying crime is at record lows in this city, and we are in a place where people really, you know, they're not even locking their doors at night.
Are we ever going to be there?
You know, it felt like to me in that kind of early teens era that crime was just, it was nowhere on the radar when we went out and talked to people in neighborhoods. Yeah. It just wasn't a political issue. And which is shocking.
Yeah, now see, and I don't remember that. I don't remember ever being a political issue.
No,
but that was probably because I was mainly working in Southern Dallas at the time.
Maybe so, but I would go to town hall meetings for council members, and crime might be the fourth thing on the list. You know, it was their streets and it was their garbage, and historically, crime is number one.
Yeah, if you do a poll, I mean, even in good times, if you do a poll, people are going to say crime, but you're right. But here's where they have to be careful, because as you pointed out, we're nowhere near those historic lows, and it won't take much to get into a situation where, you know, my hometown, Chicago, and New York, and Kansas City, Missouri, and all across the country, where you see these high crime rates. Although I will say this, that this portends well for the mayor and Garcia, that the numbers are what they are. But they're going to have to make sure that they remain like that, because it doesn't take much, I think, for crime to get out of control, because we're seeing it in other places in the country. And that's what's so remarkable about what's going on in Dallas, Sharon, because it's bucking, in a way, the national trend. Because crime is up in a lot of these cities.
Absolutely.
Philadelphia.
And of course, the numbers are, you know, so hard to really make sure we're all talking about apples to apples.
That's
because it's so hard to even find the numbers you want to compare, even if you're just talking about violent crime.
I tried to do it yesterday, and it was like, oh boy, here it goes in exercise and statistics, because it's difficult.
I know. I looked into it and thought, oh, well, I'll take 2 weeks and do nothing but that. I do think what has to be squared is the fact that, and I mean, you know, we've all lived in this city for a long time, and people are going to find something that is their issue. And I think for a lot of people, the road rage, the not feeling safe being out at night, that kind of violence is still on people's minds. But I do think that the numbers are going in the right direction. But then at the same time, you've got everybody else like complaining about like short-term rentals what's going on with the historic preservation in the neighborhoods. I mean, everybody, it just sort of depends on what your issue du jour is.
I was going to jump on homeless, which we devoted an episode to a few months ago. And it feels, you know, we talked at that time that it feels like there's more homeless than we've seen before. And
absolutely.
It feels like it dominates sort of my shooting the breeze with the neighbor talks of late. And
no,
where does that fit into the crime equation?
And the anti-panhandling.
Right. I think I'm real interested in going out on one of these anti-panhandling things and see exactly what's going on, you know, what that
Sharon
initiative
gets into
is
it,
doing.
Man. She's in Parkland with the COVID people, and she's on the streets.
She's like a method actor.
I'm on the fourth floor thinking big thoughts.
I do not sit at my desk. I will say that. Gromer and I do not sit at our desk. But
okay.
No,
I do a little bit.
Well, you're a boss. You're a boss, really.
Am I?
That's a difference. You're a boss. We're reporters.
You're right.
But I feel like that's one of those huge issues we got to be watching in 2022. And I think that's what Gromer and I are thinking about more now maybe than even looking back at 2021, because you've got rapid rehousing, huge, big, you know, kickoff. What's going to come of it? It's a question I've asked Jolie Robinson, who's the, you know, executive director over there now. I feel like these kinds of things, we have these big kickoffs, but I think our job has to be to follow up on that.
Yes.
And there, you know, it's everything from the convention center to the homeless. I mean, there are enough issues coming out of City Hall that we could never have enough City Hall reporters.
Right. That's so true.
It is pretty wheels off. Was this the most special sessions we've ever had? I don't know the answer to that.
I think so. I don't shoot me if I'm wrong.
I don't know either.
But in recent memory, of course, yes, it definitely is. Rick Perry called a few, but never like this. And it was incredible. And, you know, there's threats of another one, but I don't think that'll happen. But, yeah, you know, what was fascinating about what we saw in state government is that, you know, Texas, the politicians have always, Republicans, Democrats, they've always had this, like, independent streak. But what we've seen now in the Republican-controlled legislature is that they produced legislation and had a mindset that was really no different than Republicans in Georgia or Alabama or Virginia or you name the state. And they all were moving to sort of try to deal with former President Donald Trump's grievances. Whether it was passing elections bills or trying to rein in social media companies, you name it.
Right.
And so the difference between, I mean, Texas became nationalized in that respect, which is, to me, was rather stunning to see, since Texas is always, you know, the lawmakers pride themselves on not moving to the national beat so much. So that was a problem this year.
I thought it was a problem. Looking, our editorial board very often supports conservative principles, and there are really important reasons, I think valid reasons for that. But as we get into this kind of nationalizing of state and local and school board politics, we are getting into a place that is really dangerous in a lot of ways politically, that's, I think, distorting what the issues actually are. And I know you guys deal with that every day on your beat, just trying to explain to people, hey, the way this is represented is not exactly what it is. So maybe I can just throw that out there and put it to both of you. What are you trying to explain that's hard to get across this year?
I'll go ahead and take one stab at that, which is, I think the most challenging part of my explanations to readers is this belief that everybody is not in one of two extreme camps. Those people on both sides, whether it's like, I'm hearing a lot of back into the defund the police from really smart people,
right,
but who are saying that this week in light of the Garcia Johnson discussion about crime. I mean, they're still that. On the other side, you've got this idea that schools are being taken over, you know, by the CRT crowd. I mean, there's the
critical extreme race theory.
Yes,
for
the
those
critical
who don't
race
speak
theory.
In the, yeah.
The extremes are so wide, and everyone immediately thinks the worst of someone who they don't perceive is lined up right alongside them. And I think we've lost a lot of critical thinking. I mean, I'm not the first person to say that, but that's what's lost, and it's pulled good people away from wanting to be in office, even something like school board or even serving on the city plan commission.
Right.
It's changed. I mean, I think those of us who thought maybe things will calm down in 2021, maybe we'll come together a little bit. Well, that looks really naive now.
Yeah, when you think about 60% of Republicans, a recent poll showed, I forgot who did the poll, but 60% believe the 2020 election was stolen. That's that's astounding.
Yeah.
When you think about how folks on both sides are siloed in their positions and watching the same thing, whether it's Fox News or MSNBC or whatever they look at or listen to or read, everybody, no one's looking at different things or thinking critically or challenging the people on the blue team or the red team if they're on the same team. No one's challenging right. their own folks anymore. And it's a problem. Who would want to serve on the school board where you have folks irrationally talking about an issue and yelling and screaming at you and threatening your life? I mean, no one wants that. And so we have to get to the point where you have a uniform set of standards again. It used to be if someone was caught in a scandal, whether they were a Democrat or a Republican, and if you were a Democrat or you were a Republican, you would say, I want that guy out.
Right.
Now it's, he or she is on my team, so it's not that bad. And we see that we have an attorney general who is currently under an indictment since 2015, has been under indictment, has been under investigation, is under investigation by the FBI. Now, whether he's guilty or innocent, we'll see. But he's favored to win his mm-hmm. race.
Again.
Yeah. So, but that just shows you where you are. And that's not, I'm not saying that he shouldn't win, but I think, but there's no really analysis by a voter now of, you know, hey, is there something going on here? They say, I don't care. He's endorsed by Trump. Everything's fine. So that's where we are in politics now. And one thing about extremes. So watch out for this. In New York, there's a proposal to have non-citizens vote.
Saw that.
What do you think that's going to be? You think that issue is going to be exploited in next year's midterm elections?
Well, I think to your point, and you know, this is a local show, so we're talking about Dallas and Texas, and it's, look, the Republican Party of Texas is not solely guilty of basically hyper-partisanizing right. and polemicizing every issue that comes before it, and I think the situation in New York is the other side of that same coin,
yeah.
where you simply don't care what the broad middle thinks anymore, and you're just going to do what's best for your team, and that's problematic.
It's for someone who again is not living and dying politics every day. What I am fascinated by is the contradictions of telling us what to do that gets confusing for your average citizen, where you've got, you know, you've got the superintendent of the school saying to wear a mask. You've got the governor saying don't wear a mask. You've got, you know, there's all these contradictions that are hard to figure out what the heck you're supposed to do in some of these circumstances.
Absolutely. And while it's, you know, we're really pretty lucky to be able to sit here and debate these kind of issues or write about them, they have begun to interfere with what I would just call the business of living. Because I think about a friend who is a teacher in a conservative county, in other words, not in Dallas ISD, and she said she's one of the boldest women I know, and she and teacher of the year. She has begun putting through, she can't help but put through a lens everything she's saying to students in the classroom and everything she's bringing into the classroom. And while that's just one little example of all the different issues we're talking about here, it is how this trickles down to make really people who are just trying to go about their business, doing good work, and not really interested in all the political fights even, it's really hurting how they can go about their lives, which takes us all the way back to the mental health piece where
right.
we started.
That's why we're all going.
Yeah, and it's like you almost feel like you have to manage your own PR within your, you know, your parents or kids or whatever, right?
And it's not a good look for kids and mm-hmm. students either. It really isn't. I mean, you got the simple act of going inside of a grocery store, and we've seen fights and stabbings and shootings. If a store worker says, "Hey, you need a mask," I mean, it's really difficult out there these days.
Well, let me ask you two guys this, because there are a lot of dark things that we can dwell on, and I tend to just be of the prejudice that a lot of this bad stuff is like in the metaverse, as Mark Zuckerberg would say, and that we often like take that into our real lives, and if we got rid of that a little bit, maybe we could deal in reality. But setting that aside, thinking about the year in Dallas, good year or bad year for our city overall? Was 2021 a time of advancement for Dallas, or did we take a step back? Whoever wants to take
dog
a bite.
Dog paddling.
Yeah,
dog
I don't paddling, think we took yeah? a step back. But I wouldn't say advancement either. I we got through it.
Okay. Yeah, that's funny. I think it was a good year. So here it is. I'm the Pollyanna, it turns out.
I thought it depends on what you mean overall or
well,
for Dallas government?
Know, like,
or
what I
think, yeah, but yeah, tell me what went so well.
So I think we've gotten some good things going in our infrastructure world. We got rid of Shingle Mountain. To some extent, you can chime in. You know this story better than me. We're making some advancements on the deck park between the zoo and South Dallas. Crime is down a little bit. Property values are up. Kids are back in school. They're learning in person. I don't know. Maybe I'm not. You guys are such cynical journalists.
But isn't that all like stuff where? I mean, should be given that we're supposed
that's
to do.
That's sort of what I worry. In another one that we haven't talked about, like the power situation. Goodness, that sucked.
That was bad.
Yeah, that's hard to defend. That would be one that would be hard for any of us to defend.
I was going
to
try to say something, but I'm not.
I will get on your train, Rudy, this much.
Okay.
I do believe that we go into 2022 understanding that COVID is going to be with us, knock on wood, at least right now, Omicron or Omicron, whichever way you want to pronounce it, it's going to be contagious, but so far it appears to not be a terribly deadly or severe strain. My hope is that we can move from this year of dog paddling to a year where this sort of becomes more integrated into our culture. More things like Dallas City Hall start opening up. We are able to hold people more accountable. So I don't go into this next year with dread or fear. And heck, we've come a long way from the fear of, you know, almost 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But no, I think that, you know, we've had kind of two steps forward, three steps back all over North Texas.
I am encouraged that we have our mayor and council on the same page, and you didn't think we would get there, Rudy, but we have. And I am encouraged that there are restaurants and businesses that are opening and bars, thank goodness, that are coming
thank
back
goodness.
And maintaining.
What are you doing at 5?
Cromer can go back to eating oysters
right.
again.
So, yeah, I mean, I this was sort of a year to set up, I think, coming out of this thing and really doing some good things down the road. So
that's a little
in that respect, it's good.
No, I enjoy it, as I say, as sort of the non-journalist of the bunch to hear these perspectives. And Sharon and Gromer, really appreciate you guys coming to join us and put things in perspective. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in to The Deep Side of Dallas. Feel free to email us at deepside@dallasnews.com with questions, comments, and ideas. For Rudy Bush, I'm Paul Corliss. Happy New Year soon.
Happy
holidays
New Year
to everybody. New Year, everything, right?
Yes,
to a great 2022.
Thank you. We'll talk to y'all soon. The Deep Side of Dallas podcast is brought to you by the Dallas Morning News and the University of North Texas System. The show is produced by Andrew Sherman.
If you like what you heard today, please follow the Dallas Morning News wherever you get your podcasts. You'll also get our daily news roundup and special audio reports. And if you have questions, comments, or guest ideas, we want to hear from you. Just email us at deepside@dallasnews.com. Until next time, I'm Rudy Bush.
And I'm Paul Corliss. Thanks for listening.